Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the freeway.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. This podcast is being brought to you by BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Today's podcast is going to be with Matt Moore of the Action Network. Great guest. We've had him on a few times. I'm sure all of you guys are already following him on Twitter, at HP Basketball. Really into betting, but actually a really good X's and O's guys. And I thought it'd be a great idea to bring him on this podcast to talk about what the Rockets are doing with small ball, or as I like to call it, micro ball, and all the other intricacies about the stuff they did at the trade deadline, adding Damari Carroll, how they look going into a playoff series, and all that other stuff. So this was a pretty good conversation, but again, I'll let you guys be the judge. So without further ado, here is the podcast. And we are joined by Matt Moore of the Action Network, at HP Basketball on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. Enjoying the All-Star break. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How was Chicago? Is it actually that cold there, or was that just like the normal, like it's just cool to complain about how cold it is at All-Star break now?
No, I think, it legitimately was that cold. Saturday morning was 1 degree with like a wind chill of like -7. And that's pretty cold. I got out of a meeting on Friday and decided like, there's this cool like crossover event at Navy Pier. I'm going to go ahead. Like, it's only a mile. It's a little cold, but it'll be fine. And that was a tragic mistake, in my life that I made. I should not have walked that. And then later my wife, who lived in Chicago, was like, you walked to Navy Pier, Matt, like it says the word pier in it, which implies water. And you know, in Chicago, if you're next to the water, the wind's coming off of the lake. What are you doing? In reality, it wasn't that bad. I will still say New York is still the coldest I have ever been. New York's All-Star game was the coldest I have ever been. Not for an All-Star game. I mean, in my life. Like, I live in Colorado. New York was the coldest I have ever been. And folks say Toronto was worse. I miss Toronto, which I was not sad about. But it was pretty – Chicago is a close second. And I'm looking forward to Indiana and Cleveland in years to come. So the hits keep coming for the NBA.
Yeah, why don't they keep this thing like down to coastal cities? Like, why not Houston, Phoenix, California? Why do we have to include the northern cities here?
To be clear, the reason is you can't give Houston an All-Star game and then not give these other franchises, because they're going to be like, well, what about our city? Like, it's a huge economic boost. It's a huge moneymaker.
Well, that's
like,
true. Yeah.
Like, we're in the league too. So my thing is, you take one city and you just hold it there. And my suggestion is New Orleans. I've been to New Orleans for All-Star, I think twice, maybe three times. And all of them were spectacular. It is perfect. The weather's great. The city can accommodate it. Everyone has a good time. It's culturally appropriate with the NBA. The arena is fine for hosting the activities. Everyone has a good time. It's great. Like, All-Star Weekend is a big party. You should throw it somewhere that is good for throwing parties. Miami can't do it because they do not have the capacity. Like, the Super Bowl is a great example of why they can't handle it logistically. They did it in L.A., but it was just like L.A. was honestly too big for it. Like, it just felt like another weekend there. Wasn't crazy about that. So I'm of the opinion, just hold it in New Orleans and have that be every year.
Yeah, and they actually do have the accommodation for that, so that makes a lot of sense. Are you a fan of All-Star Weekend generally? Is that like a thing of yours, or is that just something, it's just another event on the calendar that you have to attend?
It used to be something I really loved. It's now gotten to be something I don't necessarily love. So I'm probably going to change after the Elam ending, because the plan that I had figured out the last couple of years was you fly in Thursday night, you go to all the events on Friday because there's usually a bunch of cool stuff going on Friday, not the Rising Stars, but like NBA events. You go to the media availability, which used to be on Friday. There used to be two media availabilities. Now there's only one, which sucks. You do the Saturday night, and then you cap it all off with Saturday night, which is awesome. Three-point contest, dunk contest. You could say you were there for all that stuff. The skills contest. It's a lot of fun. and then you leave Sunday morning when the flights are cheaper, the airport's empty, there's nothing going on, there's no media availability at an actual All-Star game, there's nothing for you to do, you can't get anything good, so you might as well just go home and watch it from home. But now the Elam ending, I'm like, it was so exciting, I kind of wish I was in the building for it, so we'll see if that changes next year. I hate the All-Star game usually because they don't try, but they tried this year, so if that happens going forward, maybe I'll get back in on it. In general, like, I live for the regular season. I live for the playoff matchups. I live for the playoff seedings and the race and, like, magic numbers and all, and the MVP race. So, like, I don't really like it. I understand it's necessary and everybody, like, the players really need it. But I'm not, like, super crazy about a weekend spent with 700 billion people all doing ridiculous things in a media setting with the players who just generally want to be left alone to go party. It's not, I don't consider it to be a great time.
No, I'm with you. Like, All-Star Saturday night is always fun for me. And I was expecting Sunday night to be really boring as it is normally. And it's interesting that the tweaks they made to that game really slowed down the fourth quarter. And I felt like that was the biggest takeaway there. Like, every possession felt really important, especially with the target score they put up there. I think the first three quarters, I mean, you're never going to get a competitive first three quarters with these players. That's just something you should come to expect. But that fourth quarter, like, all the best players in the league trying to compete for, I guess you call it charity, but really you're just competing to see who's the best. And that, to me, it felt really compelling that night. I'm hoping it stays the same, because it felt like the All-Star game got competitive when you got to pick teams for one season, and then the next season it went back to normal. So I'm hoping this stays the same.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to keep it. It was a huge success. Everyone loved it. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone loved it. It was competitive. The All-Stars tried. It was an actual, like, competitive environment. What you said about every possession mattering, I've been thinking about that a lot, right? Because I've been trying to think about what the, like, I'm always thinking about what the difference is between the NFL and the NBA. And they're not analogous, and you can't really make them analogous for multiple reasons. But you can emulate certain things. Like, you want to at least use the things that make the NFL so popular conceptually and try and target those things. And one of the things is that in a football game, every single possession, every play feels super important. Like, it's second down and nine. They got to get this down to third and five, or they're going to be facing third and long. Oh, it's third down and seven. They really need to pick up this first down so they can keep the momentum going. That really matters versus an average NBA game, because there's 100 possessions, you just wind up feeling like a lot of it's filler. Like, there's just, I know people that have told me, like, I don't pay attention to NBA games until the fourth quarter. And that's crazy to me because there's so much stuff to watch and focus on, but I'm also not that audience. So, like, the Elam ending created a situation in which every possession felt huge. And that's very rare. Like, that's only real for not just playoff games, but certain playoff games. Like, you have to get the, like, game four of a playoff series before that feels that big of a deal. So that, to me, is the biggest win for the NBA, is that they created something in which every possession felt huge.
Yeah, and we could go deeper and deeper into this topic. It would wind up talking about the length of the regular season, but I don't want to go there. That's a completely different conversation. The last time I had you on the podcast, we discussed the Rockets offseason with a specific focus on the Russell Westbrook trade. I think at the time you were much like me in that you weren't a fan of the trade for Houston. 54 games in now, have your thoughts changed, or do you still dislike it for Houston?
It's about what I expected, right? Like, the idea is Russ has been killing it over the last 2 months, so now it's like, oh, they figured it out. And it's like, I always expected them to figure it out at some point. Like, I picked them to win over 55 games this season. I picked them to finish with the second best record in the Western Conference. Like, they were going to put up these kind of situations. Like, they were going to put up a big record. Okay? And they're still going to do that. They have a chance. You know, if they go on a run here, they can get back into, like, 50-plus range, right? They can get there to where they're going to be, like, 52, 54, 55. And that's great. The questions are going to be about the playoffs. Like, it's going to be about the playoffs. And, you know, Russ's history, it takes a lot. You have unique context to understand. In 2017, he really was just outgunned. There was no chance for them in that series. In 2018, when they lost to the Jazz, that really was a matter of, like, Russ ruined that series. Russ took the Rubio thing personally and let that distract him. and got way too into his head, and that really cost him. And 2019 was honestly Paul George was hurt. And if Paul George isn't hurt, that series probably goes differently. They played the worst possible defense on Damian Lillard, who went nuts. Credit to him. Again, versus the worst possible coverage you can provide. I don't know what they were like. I talked to somebody with OKC, and they were like, yeah, we're not entirely sure what happened defensively. And then Paul George was hurt. Okay. So, like, Russ's failures in the playoffs do deserve a little bit of consideration. But I still have this feeling that when you play them in a series, eventually it's going to come down to teams saying, we're not going to let Harden beat us. We're not going to let Russ drive to the rim. If anybody else takes a jumper, that's fine. Anybody else. If Robert Covington scores 30 on us, hat tip to him. Good job. If Eric Gordon averages 35 on us in a series, what else can you say? Good job, Eric Gordon. If PJ Tucker scores 20, hey, what a vet. Good job knocking down the shots. And if Russ hits those threes and those mid-range jumpers, hey, you know what? Good job on Russ for stepping up and hitting shots. But, like, they're going to try and take away Harden, the way that teams drag his efficiency down over the course of a series, even though he puts up volume numbers, and they're going to try and take away Russ Westbrook drives to the rim. Now, they won't be totally successful because Harden and Westbrook are amazing, but the question is, like, can they be efficient enough, and can those other guys hit enough shots to complete this plan? And that's where I think we get into the matchups question of it depends on who they face.
Yeah, I'm with you. My thoughts are still kind of the same on the trade. I was someone who thought Chris Paul was due for a bounce-back season, and Houston, I felt like Houston kind of jumped the gun there. Going back to the matchup things, this is something we talked about. I remember the floor spacing element being a huge subject of conversation, and now the Rockets have kind of flipped that on their head by doing this small ball thing for 48 minutes a game. I'm not sure how that's gonna play out for a seven-game series, because, again, Russ and even Harden hasn't had this kind of floor spacing for 48 minutes a game before. Like, they've always had a traditional center at least close games out for them. And, you know, you'd see it for stints. Like, you'd see Jeremy Grant play center for a little bit, but it wasn't a long-term thing with OKC. And that's what's got me interested in this kind of experiment again. Like, I still view it, much like you, as an experiment until proven otherwise. I think they would have been better off with the defensive versatility of Paul and the shooting and the floor spacing. But the floor spacing element of that side of the trade has kind of been flipped a little bit, in that the Rockets have kind of morphed around Russell Westbrook. They're second in pace. They were 27th last year. They're playing to his strengths. They've taken the lane clogger out of the lane, and Russ has an open rim to the basket. This thing that teams are doing where they're having their big man guard Westbrook is interesting to me. The game where Gobert was guarding him for that first quarter wasn't particularly successful, but I did notice that Russ took a lot of mid-range jumpers and he made it that time. But can he make that for a seven-game series is an interesting question to me. Utah in that game ran away from it really quick. I'm interested to see if a team is disciplined enough, and maybe Utah again, you know, maybe they go back, they watch the film and they say, yeah, we should have stuck to this for the entire game. I want to see if a team does that for an entire game, have the rim protector guard Westbrook and not deviate from it, and say, if Westbrook hits his mid-range shots, hat tip to him. If he doesn't, well, they're playing right into what we want to do.
Yeah, I think, again, I think it's so much of it's going to depend on who they face, right? So I think the Lakers are an interesting question, right, for what they're going to do, because they want to drop. Like, that's what they want to do, is they want to drop in pick and roll coverage. And if you do that, they're going to, like, Harden's going to kill you. Like, Harden's going to absolutely just annihilate you if you play drop.
Yeah.
But I think they'll probably do that because, like, L.A. seems like the kind of team that will be too arrogant to think that they need to change. Like, the Thunder were like this with the Blazers. And I'm not saying that the same thing will happen, because the Lakers are much, 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 much better than that Thunder team was. But when you are very confident in your coverage, you're just like, we're not going to change what we do. We're not going to freak out, do a bunch of new stuff. We're just going to do what we do, and we're good enough, we'll win. And that is not how the playoffs work. Like, you need to be targeting the strengths of the opponent and forcing them into their weaknesses. Like, that's how you win those series. So, like, I don't think that's very successful, but the question is going to be, like, all right, they're playing the Lakers. They're probably going to have LeBron playing free safety. And that's probably effective because you can bring LeBron to help on Harden drives, overplay him a little bit up high, and then LeBron protects at the rim, right? And then with Russ, you're really talking about like probably KCP. And if Russ has a big series, they're probably going to live with it. Versus like Denver, Denver is likely to be like, okay, we get absolutely killed by Harden, but that was because of Capella. So now, like, we're just going to switch everything. And we're going to put Torrey Craig on Russell Westbrook off ball. And Torrey gives Russell Westbrook nightmares. Like, Torrey Craig does legitimately one of like the top five jobs I've ever seen a guy do on Russ. And he's done it for 4 years now, or 3 years now. He does it really well. Within the context of all that is, well, then Harden's going to go off. Sure, but the reason that Denver got into the four-way deal was because was that like they needed to move Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez for sure. They wanted to pick up a first rounder so they can use it in a trade later. Absolutely. When they had a chance to get Clint Capella out of the Western Conference, they jumped on it. Like, that was not an insignificant part of Denver's motivation. Because Denver could actually bring enough help on Harden. They couldn't do that and then protect the lob on Capella. When that becomes a kickout to Robert Covington, the problem is, like, Capella's finishing lobs, like, what, 65%? 70%? Like, those are extremely high-look percentages. Covington and Tucker are going to have to shoot, like, 40 to 50% on those corner threes in order to make the math work here. But then you go to, like, the Clippers, and I think that I think the formula switches again, where I think that actually leans a lot more into what Houston wants. Like, it's fascinating in that I love what they did because they went all the way in. My skepticism was about, like, not even skepticism. Like, I just think that there are trade-offs to what they did. I think that, and people close to Houston agree with this assessment, they are closer to the Lakers and the Clippers and probably the Bucks than they were before the trade. Utah and Denver are probably also closer to Houston now. The only difference is that Houston's very confident in, like we talked about with these teams being confident in what they do. Like, Houston's confident that they're like, all right, so they're closer. We could still beat them. We have James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And, like, we're just going to be better than them. Even if this matchup problem isn't as much of an advantage for us, we're still going to be better. I'm not sure that's the case because I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the West are all about the same. I think they are about equal value of team.
Wait, so you don't think the Lakers have separated themselves a little bit?
No. So the Lakers have absolutely pounded the living dirt out of bad teams, okay? And when we look at, like, their record, it's good versus teams over 500 because they have this, like, they have the best record in the league or in the West. They're 15-10 versus teams over 500. They're 26-2 versus teams under 500. So, like, look, it's hard to be over 500 versus teams over 500. Like, it's hard to beat those teams more often than not. But a lot of that is, like, you're beating, like, Memphis, who's over 500, or you're beating the Thunder, right, versus, like, the top-end teams. Now, like, they're 2-1 versus Denver, okay, but Denver took them to overtime, and that was a competitive game. They're 0-2 to the Clippers. They're 0-1 to the Bucks. Like, there's all these situations in which, like, the Lakers are not the best way I can say it is, like, the Lakers aren't the Bucks. Like, the Bucks have basically said, like, we have no cracks in our resume. Like, you could still say the Bucks may not win the title, but you're going to have to base that off of, like, nebulous, not ready for playoffs, not built for them, whatever, and not, like, you can't point to anything in the regular season and say, like, well, this is where the Bucks struggle. Versus the Lakers, like, they're good, but they're not dominant. They are a really good team. They're the best team in the Western Conference. They're not dominant. And so, like, I think that the Lakers are susceptible to the Clippers, the Rockets, and the Mavericks. I think those three teams can give the Lakers trouble. Because the Lakers, they really get in trouble with the math problem. That's how Houston beat them after the trade. L.A. shot 50% from the field. And Houston won because they made 10 more threes. L.A. is bottom five in three-point attempts per 100 possessions. And they shoot a decent amount, but it doesn't matter because they don't make enough of them. You can outpace them. And this was, I think, was a lot of why Houston went the direction they did. If Houston upsets the Lakers, it's going to be on the back of their three-point shooting. Like, and more so than the average, like, the Rockets are always going to shoot a lot of threes. But that's a big tactical advantage they have in that, like, the Rockets are only going to take layups and threes. Like, zero of anything else, and mostly threes. And in doing so, they can overcome the Lakers' efficiency by just outpacing them 3-for-2 every time. So, like, that to me is, like, a matchup that I think that they have. The Lakers are not – the Lakers are great, and the Lakers can win the title. The Lakers are the best team in the Western Conference. They're not invincible.
Yeah, and I actually liked what the Clippers did at the deadline in getting Marcus Morris, and obviously...
Really?
Well, yeah. I'm a fan of Marcus Morris, and I think he matches up well with LeBron, and we saw that in some of the Eastern Conference series. I'm not sure where they're going to find spots to play all these guys. Like, I think, you know, there's obviously a minutes issue there, and I think going into the season, I was a fan of what the Clippers had versatility-wise defensively, and I thought the athleticism was great, and they were just a team that I thought was clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the Western Conference. They haven't played to that level yet, but I do think you have to give them some excuse because they haven't had Paul George and Kawhi play, you know, for extended stretches together, and they have had this load management thing. But I'm with you with the Denver thing. Like, these were conversations I was having in the Toyota Center after the trade. Like, Clint Capela was a big problem for them, and his athleticism and his ability to run in transition was another element. Like, he was just way faster than any other center in the NBA, and the Rockets just lost that. They are now betting on, instead of that help defense coming to help Harden out and the Rockets getting an open dunk, they're betting that open 3%, that open three-point shooter that comes and helps on Harden's pick and roll will hit a high enough percentage to compensate for that. And I'm not sure if that's going to be good enough. We'll see. Like, that's a pretty high percentage shot you're giving up there with Capela. But you're also getting the floor spacing element. That also helps compensate for it. You're also getting Westbrook in an open space, and that helps a lot in what the Rockets are trying to do offensively. Defensively is where I struggle to buy in, because the Rockets are betting on forced turnovers making up for the rebounding advantage they're going to give up every night. And, you know, like, this is a very new school, very controversial way of thinking of defense. I still am not all the way there yet, though it did work towards the second half of last season. And this was something I actually talked to you about and a couple other people. Like, I was skeptical in how they were getting to their defensive numbers at the second half of last year, but they were doing it, and they were doing it off of forced turnovers. I'm not sure if that's if the Rockets looked at that and said, you know what, we can do that for 82 games. We can do that in a playoff setting. We don't need Clint Capela anymore. We'll lose the rebounding battle every night, but we're going to win the turnover battle by a lot, and we're going to become a good defense that way. That, to me, is the biggest element of this. Like, the reason I still have the Lakers, the Clippers, and even the Nuggets ahead of the Rockets right now, it's because, you know, they're 15th in defense. Like, you can't be 15th in defense and legitimately call yourself a true contender to make the NBA Finals. Like, I think the Rockets, in the second half run, they have to climb up to at least 10th at some point. And I'm not sure if forced turnovers are going to get you there. I'm interested to see how they do defensively in this closing stretch. They have the 24th strength of schedule remaining, so that's interesting. They haven't been able to take advantage of weak teams to start the season, so I want to see if they're able to kill, like, the Golden States, the Clevelands, the bad teams in the NBA, and legitimately mount up a good stretch of games. That, to me, is the biggest element in Houston going all in on small ball. Like, that gamble is something that I'm not sure if it's going to pay off, but that's what they're betting on.
Yeah, I would caution against the bad teams. One thing that I've kind of come to understand is Houston is going to play some bad team in March, and they're going to play the best basketball they've played all season. They did this versus the Hawks the last 2 years. Like, they have played games versus the Hawks the last 2 years. I think they were done with the Hawks this year. But where I watched those games and was like, this is the best basketball I've ever seen Houston play. Like, it was incredible. And most of that's because, like, Houston's garbage. But it was also, like, something about the matchup just made Houston hum at such a frequency that was incredible. But you're never going to get there. Like, the teams are too good defensively in the playoffs. Even if you have advantages, you're talking about margins. Like, it's about like 46% versus 44% versus 42%. Like, that's what we're really talking about. You know, it's funny because like Utah, I think, got probably closer to them. But the big thing that I've been kind of saying is like, look, a lot of this is Utah still probably can't beat them because Gobert can't post up. And post ups are not efficient. Like, I'm not a person that believes in like the post up anymore as part of the modern NBA offense because nobody's really that good at them. Like, there's only a handful of guys who score over 0.9 points per possession, which is the range that you kind of got to be at in order to keep pace with the rest of your offense. Gobert can't do it. Like, he's just not. He doesn't have the skill set. If they switch and put James Harden on him, James Harden's going to win that post-up matchup. However, Denver will absolutely take that switch and put Nikola Jokic in the post versus James Harden. And as good as James Harden is in the post, Nikola Jokic is better. Like, he will, if they do that and Jokic has the mindset, which he may not, because Jokic sometimes opts for the right play versus the smart play. But if he commits, sometimes he just is like, I'm going to beat this matchup to death. I'm just going to beat this matchup down. And if he does that, like, Jokic is going to put up 40-45. And that's really tough to overcome when he's drawing fouls and causing mayhem. With as well as when you bring help, he's going to be passing to cutters and shooters. So, like, that to me is a real problem. On the flip side, though, a sneaky guy that's actually not that you will live with in the post a little bit is Anthony Davis. The numbers are really good on Davis in the post. But the reality is that Davis doesn't like to bang down low. Like, he wants to just, like, give you, like, a little bit of a bump and then shoot, like, a turnaround fadeaway. That's an inefficient shot. And Harden can defend that pretty well, and Covington can defend that pretty well. And if that's the setup, then, like, the Rockets are going to take that most of the time. Like, you live with that over whatever it is that Dwight, you know, then that LeBron can do. Like, you're taking that every single time. So there are these ways that they can win these matchup advantages. Another way is, like, the Clippers are pretty pass-heavy. Like, they want to always kind of go for the home run ball. That leads to a lot of deflections. So I think there's probably, like, an opportunity there for the Rockets to really get in the passing lane there. Like, Denver's a pass-heavy offense as well. So those deflection numbers really do start to matter in those situations. Like, it's close. It's just such an uphill battle. And at the end of all of this, it's still going to come down to P.J. Tucker, Robert Covington, Ben McLemore, and Daniel House making threes. Those guys are going to have to make threes. They're going to have to make them in volume, and they're going to have to make them efficiently. And if they do not do that in 3 out of 7 games, they can win one with just Harden or Westbrook. But if they do not get those kinds of shooting performances, they're not going to make it out of the second round.
All right, we're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our sponsor, Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all things sports. March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day are right around the corner. Bet Online has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. The best part is when you sign up, you receive a 50% welcome bonus. The Wilder Fury rematch goes down this Saturday night. We can't think of a better way to wager on the fight than doing it with actual free money. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up. It's super easy. And if you're already into betting, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Yeah, and that post-up element is really interesting to me because you're finding that even the smartest teams, they just cannot help themselves in posting up PJ Tucker or James Harden or Russell Westbrook. Like, they just, like, even Boston heading into that matchup before the All-Star break, like, Brad Stevens was like, we are not going to get out of our offense to play to Houston's strengths. Like, we know they're like linebackers. We're not going to post them up. And in the first quarter, you had Enes Kanter posting up PJ Tucker. Like, it's just a natural instinct as a basketball player. You're starting to see these big men post up their mismatches. And that is, more often than not, it's going to lead to, as you said, an inefficient shot or a steal or a turnover or just something that Houston wants. And that's another element of the Robert Covington trade that I think that Houston is, you know, kind of putting all their chips into. Like, they can switch again. They're able to switch 1 through 5 defensively again. They're able to force turnovers. They're able to force these contested post-up shots. And, like, I think when they lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbamute, they quickly realized they weren't able to do that anymore. And over the past year and a half, they've kind of, you know, cobbled together some switch defenders and in House, in Covington, in Macklemore. And there, I guess the idea here is that they can finally do that again and play to their comfort level defensively.
Yeah, so the linebacker concept is specifically built to beat the slip, right? Like, you run a high pick and roll, the big slips, the guard delivers a bullet pass or a bounce pass to the slip, and before the switch can occur, the big is running in space. Let's say it's Anthony Davis. And so he catches it from LeBron, and he's going at the rim. And then there's Covington and Tucker there to play as like linebackers and then recover out. That actually works with the Lakers because if you come up front and Davis doesn't shoot the floater, which he can and he's pretty good at, and that's your kind of danger, if he kicks the sideways past the corners, you have just won the possession. If Danny Green, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, or Avery Bradley are taking three-pointers from the corners, you have just won because LeBron James and Anthony Davis didn't shoot. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a win. Like, on every single possession in a playoff series, it goes in or not, you're just like, okay. And if, you know what, if Danny Green is going to hit, like, five threes in a game, and that's going to really irritate you, but if you have that, if in that same game, Ben McLemore hits five or six, you've neutralized it, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of that works. I think one of the problems is, like, again, I keep getting back to, like, Denver, because what Denver's going to do in that situation is Denver's going to be like, okay, well, the big's going to slip. Now, Jamal Murray may not be able to get the pass there because Jamal Murray's bad under pressure. But if Jamal Murray gets the pass there and you bring the help in from those linebacker positions, they're not just going to take the corner three. Gary Harris, Will Barton, or Michael Porter Jr. are going to drive. And now your defense is trying to compensate by making multiple rotations. And now all of a sudden Jokic is like slipped in there and he's got rebounding position. And that's where the offensive rebounding hurts you. So like Denver specifically, I think, is a problem. But look, Denver may not play Houston at all, right? And if Harden just does what he always does to the Nuggets, which is just obliterate them, then they're in the clear anyway. But if it's like if Houston winds up in the 4-5 versus Utah, that's not a bad lie. Like, it's really not. Everyone's going to be like, oh, they have to face the Lakers second round. No. You have to go through the Lakers at some point anyway. If you don't face the Lakers in the second round, you got to face them in the third. We went through this whole thing with the Warriors last year, and I get the idea that, like, oh, but if they made it to the Western Conference Finals, the Warriors would have been injured. Well, we don't know if Kevin Durant gets hurt if he doesn't play Houston. Like, the chaos sequence gets all out of whack. The point is, I don't think 4-5 is bad if you get to play Houston. If it's 4-5 versus the Clippers, all right, that's a little rougher. If it's 4-5 versus Denver, that's even fine too. Like, I don't think that there's a lie where Houston has to feel bad about where they're going. Like, their upside for the playoffs is still high because of their variance. Like, they increased their variance by a lot. Their ceiling's a lot higher. The only concern I would really have is, like, if Houston goes on a run in the second half of the season and they make the 2 seed and Dallas finishes 7th, I'm concerned. Because the only, like, a really easy way to beat Houston is make more 3s than them. And there are only a handful of teams in the world that can do that. And the Dallas Mavericks are one of them. And now, like, that would be scary to me, is having Luka and shooters with Porzingis against this concoction, I think, is a little worrisome. So they're way more upset vulnerable, but they're also way more likely to make the finals. And that's probably, and like, that's absolutely worth it. Like, I think that was the formula that they looked at, was like, okay, we're probably not as good against the teams that we were favored against, but we should still be favored in our eyes. And against the teams that we think we were dogs, we're probably a coin flip, and we'll take that.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, like, I think the Rockets were struggling to find their identity with Westbrook before they made this trade.
Yeah.
And I feel like they found it, and they actually believe in what they're doing organizationally. Like, from top to bottom, like, Mike loves this. Like, whenever you bring up offensive rebounds to Mike, he's like, yeah, but can you score on us again? Like,
yeah,
like, that's the most important stat here. Like, second chance points is even more important to us than the offensive rebounding stats. We're going to give those up, but can you score on us that second possession? We think we can defend well enough to where it won't matter. And, you know, that's the real test here. Can teams really beat up on Houston on the glass and then take advantage of that?
I don't know who can do that. Like, I don't, you know, Montrezl Harrell can probably hurt you in that respect. Kawhi's a really good offensive rebounder, right? So like that's gonna hurt. But like Kawhi's great. Like you lose a Kawhi Leonard and you're just like, well, he's Kawhi Leonard. Like, yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, like Jokic is gonna be good in that aspect, but the Nuggets have not been a good offensive rebounding team all season. The Nuggets haven't been a good rebounding team this season. So like I don't know that that's necessarily like a dangerous category. The Lakers are really great in that aspect, but so much of that is Dwight Howard, and I don't know if Dwight can stay on the floor if you're playing five out because you really are just giving up wide open threes. Like I said, like it's a really fascinating gambit that they're taking on. I don't know if I hope it works. That feels like too strong. I will say that I have sustainability questions with it. I think the playoffs are good because you're going to have in the first round, you'll have days where you go 2 days without a game before your next one. Like that happens routinely in the first round. After the first round, it's every other day. You're playing every other day through the rest of the playoffs. And that day of rest helps, but God, watching these guys and the effort that they have to put in defensively, this is taxing. Like there's going to be nights in the playoffs when it's like, game two, game four at home, even if they don't have home court advantage, game six in a closeout where like they don't have the legs. And that to me is like a real concern because it's exhausting what they're trying to do. Oh, yeah. It really is. And like, you know, it's basically saying like, all right, guys, this is the challenge. Are you up for this? And, you know, PJ Tucker's like, let's go. Let's bring it on. You know, like this is what we're doing. Okay, let's go. But part of that too is like, look, if you want this to work, that also means that James and Russ are going to have to try. Mm-hmm. Like you are not getting away with half-ass efforts from them. It can't happen. They can't take possessions off anymore. Like you got to be locked in on every single one. This is what it's going to take. If you're going to go this route, you can do it. But everybody's going to have to be locked in and everybody's going to have to be at that level, and that's a high bar. Like that's a really high bar for them to get to. Yeah.
Yeah, it does take a high degree of effort to play what they're doing, right? To play the way they're doing right now, and make up for that size discrepancy. And in the games that they don't have their legs, you can see they're just gonna get bludgeoned. Like that Phoenix game, that back to back, they just got destroyed. Like DeAndre Ayton was killing them in that first half, and like it just continued on. And then they, you know, you saw guys like Kelly Oubre go off because the Rockets just they forfeited. They didn't have it anymore, and. That's also a question of mine too. Like, can James not take those possessions off? Can he on the weak side? Is he going to keep an eye on his man? Is he going to stay with him? Is he going to make those switches? Is he going to deny big man? Like, because that's a big element of this. When Anthony Davis does get the ball in the post, is he going to come in and is he going to careen in and try and make that double team, or is he going to let his guy? You know, make an easy cut and have Anthony Davis make that pass. I don't know. That's going to be really interesting to close the season out and into the playoffs.
And like, well, and part of that too is Rockets fans feel very confident because they're like, ha ha ha, James Harden's a sneaky great defender. Bring it on. Except that the smart teams are not going to do that. What the smart teams are going to do is the smart teams are going to say, let's switch off ball. Let's make them switch off ball and let's get Harden on a cutter and then let's slash that guy or bring him off of a screen. Because when Harden disconnects off ball, it gets to be a much bigger problem. Like, I'm not as worried about Harden on ball as I am about him off. Like, that's like one of the key kind of things here is like if Harden, let's say that they hide Harden on Jamichael Green.
Sure.
Okay. The Clippers are going to run action with Lou Williams off ball with Lou and Jamichael Green trying to get that switch. Now, they can reject it. They can reject the screen, and that's fine. But they'll keep doing that in the hopes that the Rockets switch to get Lou onto James Harden, and then Lou's running off ball, not with the ball still, because Harden's good on ball. But he's coming off of screens and Harden's lagging behind, and now all of a sudden Lou Williams has got an open three. Like, that's where James really goes to hell. Is like, if you force James into a situation where he's got to run on defense from cross court to cross court through screens, he is just going to lag behind. He's going to give up about halfway through. And then you're going to have open threes. And that's like, that's a problem. But I will say this too. Like, look, the Clippers are one of the only teams that can do that. The Nuggets can't go small. Paul Millsap and Jeremy Grant have to be on the floor the entire time because of how their team is constructed. They will not go smaller than that. Utah can, and that's an interesting one, right? Is like, if they put him, if they decide to hide Harden on Ingles, Ingles is going to work him off ball. He's going to make him go through everything. So like, the Jazz can go Mitchell, Conley, Bogdanovich, Ingles, Gobert. Like, that's their preferred. They're going to give up a lot of points to Harden because Royce O'Neal's not on the court. But, like, that's what they'll do. So, like, that's going to be the real key is, like, can both Harden and Westbrook on switches either reject them or can they keep up off ball when they start targeting that way? Because, like, everyone just kind of assumes, like, oh, we're going to hunt down Harden. I don't know if that's going to happen as much with when they're switching as it is going to be, like, let's just move him off ball and then punish him that way. Because that's a much easier tactic to get James to slip.
Yeah, and you saw it in that Lakers game where Danny Green absolutely killed Harden on these back cuts. Harden could not stay in front of him. It wasn't the three pointers; it was the back cuts. And then when he would get open, he would get an open three pointer. It was one of those things where, like, if you just stay active enough off the ball, you're gonna get him. Like, at one point of the game, you're gonna get him. Even if he's playing good defense, there's gonna be a possession where he's not, and you're gonna get him. And the Rockets really have to make that a 10% play instead of a 30-40% play. Because if it's a 30-40% play, they're not winning playoff series. They're just not. Like, they can't defend at a high enough level to make up for that rebounding disadvantage. And Harden has to be engaged, and same with Russ. Russ has to stay engaged off the ball as well. We have to talk about this. So the Rockets, it looks like over the weekend, they're going to sign Damari Carroll and Jeff Green over the next couple of days. In fact, the Jeff Green signing was made official today. Let's start with Carroll. Does he have anything left in the tank to contribute, or is it wise to say, since the Spurs gave him little playing time this season and bought him out with over $10 million remaining on his contract and a couple years remaining, that he's closer to done than he is to being a contributing NBA player?
I think some of it, like, look, a lot of it is we're finding out that guys just aren't made for the Spurs way. I think a lot of guys are having hard times with, like, the way that the Spurs do things because they're not good either. Like, it's a lot easier to sacrifice and do all the things the Spurs ask of you when you're winning. It's a lot harder when you're under 500 watching LaMarcus Aldridge hoist up mid-range jumpers all the time. Like, the math gets to be really tricky. I don't necessarily think that DeMar's had health injuries the whole way. I think it's probably, like, a concern, but I will also say this, like, look, I've been covering the league for 12 years. I've seen a lot of Mike D'Antoni teams. I've seen a lot of Mike D'Antoni teams. I am a huge D'Antoni fan. I talked to him a couple of years ago for a feature, and it was great. He's one of my favorite coaches to talk to. I've wanted him to win a title with Phoenix. I was happy that Golden State credited him. I wanted him to win in 2018. Like, I have nothing but the best respect and love for Mike D'Antoni. Love everything about him. I say that to say this. He's not going to play 9 deep. Okay? We're going to get to 7, maybe 8, and that's it. Like, he's just not going to change. It's going to be House, Tucker, Covington, Harden, Westbrook, Rivers, and one more. It can be Ben McLemore. It can be Jeff Green. It can be Damari Carroll. It won't be Tyson Chandler. It could be Thabo. Probably not Isaiah Hartenstein, even though I think that he probably deserves some minutes. But that's it. Like, he's going to go 7. He always goes 7. He will go no more than 8. That's it. Like, he has proven this over and over and over again. Eric Gordon's in there, too. He's not going to go 9 deep. So these guys don't really matter. They just don't. Like, they're good to have in case somebody gets injured. But the problem is, like, even when D'Antoni's had injuries, he just shortens the rotation. He just lops out that guy and gives the minutes to all the other guys he was already playing. It drives me crazy. But this is, like, this has always been the big hole in Mike's entire philosophy is he wants the guys that do what he wants and are the best on the floor at all times, without ever really considering that by giving guys a rest, you're going to get better minutes later. And he's never willing to make that concession. And I've seen nothing to suggest that he is. Like, again, House, Tucker, Covington, Harden, Westbrook, McLemore, Gordon, and probably Austin Rivers. That's like the 8. And if they get anybody else in the rotation, I would be surprised. I don't think, like, regular season, sure. But once the playoffs begin, if they get to eight, I'll be surprised. I think it'll probably be seven, because that's just the way that he goes.
Yeah, and I don't even feel like asking about Jeff Green, because I feel like we do this dance, this song and dance with them every few years. Like, every fan base is convinced that their system is going to help fix him, and he'll thrive playing this way. And I am a little bit curious to see how he plays as a center, as a full-time center. Like, that's what he's going to be for the Rockets. He's not going to play any other position other than center. But in all honesty, like, I just don't have that much confidence in anything working out with him. But the Carroll thing is interesting, with Thabo Sefolosha taking up these backup center minutes, because it seems like that's what the Rockets have settled on. And I'm not sure if you trust 35-year-old Thabo Sefolosha playing heavy playoff minutes at backup center, but I am interested of Damari, you know, at that position.
It's funny that you think that, because, like, I don't really think much of Damari, but I actually, like, Jeff Green was really good in 2018. It was on a Cavs team that was a freaking train wreck the entire season, just parts spiraling off, like, on fire. Like, there's sewage coming out of the sides and fountains. It was a train wreck, okay? Yeah. But beneath all of that, Jeff Green was legitimately good. And he wasn't just good in a he-put-up-numbers way. Like, the plus-minus numbers finally for him turned. You just had to put him next to LeBron James, and finally Jeff Green was a plus player. But look, like, James Harden is an elite player. Russell Westbrook's an elite player. He's got familiarity with those guys. I think you're probably underrating what Jeff Green can do. I say that with a caveat that I don't expect him to play, because I already went over why. But, like, if he's got to play, I have more faith in him than I do Damari Carroll, because Damari also sometimes has, like, some problems with decision-making. And I feel like Jeff Green's decision-making at this point in his career, like, he knows, like, he's a role player. He's a fringe guy. He needs to do what he's told. He'll do it. He'll take the three when it's open. He'll help down when he needs to. He won't blow assignments. He'll be fine.
Yeah, that's interesting. He is signing a 10-day contract, so I am interested to see if
he even sticks around.
Yeah. Well, let's end on this. So you mentioned, we talked a lot about the Lakers, Jazz, and Nuggets. I'm interested to see, among those five Western Conference teams that you listed, where do the Rockets stack up to you? Because I still have the Lakers, Clippers, and even the Nuggets at this point. I still think those three teams are better, and I would probably take those three teams in a playoff series over Houston. I'm not completely there with Denver, but I think I'm there. Utah, I that's the only team where I'm like, yeah, I think Houston can win this series. Where do you stand on those five teams?
So I think the problem is, like, I don't think there are tiers here. I think they're all in the same tier with different probabilities of getting out. The Lakers and Clippers are probably 35% to 40% each. Let's say 35, because it feels low putting everybody else in the same in the tiny 30%. Or in, like, 20%. Let's say 35%. So, like, the Clippers and Lakers have a 35% chance of coming out of the West, I think. Like, more, a little better than one out of three times those teams are coming out of the West. Okay? Combined, it's better than two out of three times. Right? That's really good probability.
Sure.
I think that Houston probably encapsulates a solid 15% of the remaining 30%. I think it's probably Lakers 35%, Clippers 35%, Rockets 15%, Denver 10%, Utah 5. That's where I think I would kind of put it. If it goes Lakers, because Lakers are going to win the one seed. They have two big, I already looked at this today. They're too high up in the loss column with too few games remaining. They have 2-1 tiebreaker over Denver. The Clippers are 2-0 against them, but are too far back, and they're going to rest manage. They're not catching them. The Lakers are getting the one, okay? If it goes Lakers, Rockets, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, the Rockets, I think, are making the Western Conference Finals. I think they could beat the Clippers. I think they could beat whoever's in the six. I think that they're gonna, or in the seven. I think they're gonna wind up in the Western Conference Finals versus the Lakers, and that's gonna be like it's gonna be a coin flip. I really think it's a coin flip. I like the Clippers. I like the Rockets quite a bit versus the Clippers. I like them quite a bit versus the Lakers. Like I'm, as a guy who does betting at Action Network, they're gonna be big dogs, the Lakers, like huge dogs, and I'm probably gonna wind up laying money on the Rockets to win just based off of the probabilities of it. Like the number is going to be too good for me to pass up. They're going to be like, you know, plus 500 or something. And that's going to be like just too juicy for a team I think has matchup advantages. But if it goes, you know, Lakers, Jazz, Clippers, Rockets, Nuggets, that path is a lot harder. Like that's a lot tougher road to go through. And all these things are really going to, again, so much of it just depends on if, one of their guys, one of them, Ben McLemore, Austin Rivers, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, one of those guys shoots red hot, 48% from three for two rounds. They can make the finals. That's what they need. They need one guy to be the outlier. They never get it. It's always like shooting slumps. Like the Rockets have terrible, and some of this is like, the way defenses play them and how hard and how exhausting it is. And like, there's stuff that goes into it. The other thing I'll say is I don't like to buy into narratives, but this is the reality. Harden's going to have to play better than he's ever played in his life. Like that's just it. His numbers are very good for the playoffs. You can make all sorts of arguments about how good James has been statistically. His impact never matches up with the regular season. He has to be the most impactful guy on the floor if they're going to make a run. That has to happen. There's just no way around it. They cannot do it otherwise. As good as Russ is, teams are going to find ways to neutralize Russ a lot easier than Harden because Harden's more skilled. Like, James needs to start resting, and James needs to be able to give his absolute best performances of his career in the second and third rounds. If they do that, they can make the finals.
Yeah, it's statistically like incorrect to suggest that James Harden's efficiency doesn't drop in the playoffs. Like it's just true. Like his energy waxes and wanes as the series goes on. Defenses get more sophisticated and tighter on him. They start figuring some things out.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. And it is interesting to see teams like the Jazz try funky defenses on him and commit to it for a 7-game series. I do think like the Jazz didn't get enough credit to just how inefficient Harden was in that first round series and how well Chris Paul played. And I think your point about the role players is interesting because I do think one of these days you're going to get a role player that does go off for them. Like Eric Gordon is due for a huge series with the Rockets. Like he's just due. He needs to have at least one of these series. He's for his career, he's a 37% career 3-point shooter, and I feel like he's going to have one of those series. Your confidence in the Rockets against the Lakers and Clippers is a little bit higher than mine's, but I do think against bigger teams like the Lakers and Jazz, the Rockets they're just way different from any other team. Those two teams are going to play in the Western Conference, so I do think that might work in their favor. But I think the last point you made was pretty salient. The most important thing that matters in these last 25 games is how the Western Conference standing shakes up, because it's all about matchup. And if you get a favorable matchup, you have a much easier pathway to make the Western Conference Finals. All right, Matt, where can we follow you on Twitter and read all your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can catch me on the Action Network. We've got a great app. Download it. It's the fastest thing you're going to find for tracking scores. It's got all sorts of gambling information on there, as well as my analysis across and like just general sports fun stuff. But it's also like if you're just trying to track games, you're going to get the best stats. I've actually timed it. Our stats feed is ahead of the national TV broadcast. So if you want to like be up to the second with your numbers when you're looking at it, when you're trying to track games, check out the Action Network app.
Well, I will be doing that. Thank you so much for coming on, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Matt Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Make sure to follow me on Twitter if you're not already doing so, at SolomonLeeNBA. Give us 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoy the show. And yeah, guys, good night.